I told you that the definition of faith is believing without seeing. Really, the Bible tells you that. But and so, you know, and then actually I haven't been in the mode of, okay, in 2 weeks you're going to preach again. And so this has been a new experience for Bruce and I at the expense of Arden, unfortunately. And so 2 weeks ago I started thinking, what am I supposed to talk about next time? And as I was thinking about that, actually I was having a conversation with Bruce sitting on the patio with him, and it was like God just spoke it to me what I wanted to share with you today. And really, when I started thinking about it, and the conversation that I was having was more concerning death. But as I began spending time with the Lord and really looking at what I would want to talk to you about today, it really was a message of hope. And so I looked up the definition of hope, and it says, hope is favorable and confident expectation, and it has something to do with the unseen future. And so started looking at that whole idea of hope, and God led me to this passage that says, praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. And it really caused me to look at our hope. And hope is a little bit different than faith. Faith is believing without seeing. Hope is a confident expectation. I am confidently expecting that this good thing is going to come to me at some time in the unseen future. And so in looking at this verse, it says we have a living hope. And our living hope is Jesus. Our living hope is the fact that Jesus died and he was resurrected. So our hope is in the resurrection of Jesus. Because Jesus died and came back to life, he was raised from the dead, we have that hope in our lives as well, that after we die, we are going to live again. We are going to be alive, just as Jesus is alive. So then I started thinking about that and thinking, well, life is really good. We all love life. You know, we cling to life because life is good. And so our future is about life. It's not about death. It's about life. And then I thought, well, you know, life is good. Death is not. Death is bad. I mean, really thinking about death, none of us look forward to it, I don't think. And so I started thinking about actually when I was talking to Bruce that day, I was thinking about how I have changed over my lifetime. And I started thinking about my childhood and how I felt about death as a child. And so a few observations that I came to in my own life, I started thinking about, I grew up for a large part of my childhood being really afraid of death, really afraid of death. Not so much even afraid of my death, but as afraid of my parents dying. And I found a verse in Hebrews chapter 2, actually a couple verses. I paraphrased the first just to make it easier for understanding. And it says, basically what it says is, Jesus shared in our humanity so that he could destroy the power of death through his own death. And this part is not paraphrased. And it says, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. And I was in slavery a lot in my childhood because I was really afraid of death. And so I started thinking about, why was that so? Why was I so afraid of death? And as a child, when I was 3 years old, my oldest sister died unexpectedly. She was 7. And that was the first of a string of deaths that my parents experienced over the next 5 to 6 year span. They lost 5 family members, close family members, like parents and grandparents. But the beginning was my sister. And so I was 3 when she died. And, you know, what do you tell a 3-year-old? I don't know if they told me anything. I don't remember. I just know how it affected me as a child and how I grew up being really afraid that my parents were going to die. And I couldn't have even told you why. That was just my experience. So I think, you know, even, and I didn't have words, which is something they say about children as well. As children, it's not, they don't, it doesn't come out in words because they don't have the words. And so it was really just what was going on internally inside of me, which was a tremendous amount of fear. I don't remember ever having a conversation. I'm not saying that I didn't, but I don't remember having a conversation with my parents about what happened to me when I died or what happened to the people that died, that I watched die. And so I just kind of had to figure it out myself, which wasn't really good. And then at the age of 14, I was away at camp and I got a phone call. Somebody came and got me while I was at camp and they said, your dad has had a heart attack and he's in the hospital. And so then I was really afraid my dad was going to die and I wasn't even home. So I went down to the office and I called home and I said, should I come home? And my mom said, no, just stay there, which was kind of strange because, and I think she was trying, I think she was protecting my dad, didn't want him to think that he was going to die. So she said, no, stay at camp. And so then I stayed at camp and just worried that my dad was going to die while I was at camp. And then I went home and I remember going to the hospital and back then, this was a long time ago, when you had a heart attack, they had you lay in bed for 3 weeks. They wouldn't let him get out of bed. He was in the hospital for 3 weeks doing nothing. Now you have a heart attack, they get you up, okay, time to walk, time to do all this stuff. They don't do that. They didn't do that back then. And so I remember going to the hospital to visit my dad, and I just remember him being in that hospital bed and just looking so gray, and that fear of death just overwhelmed me again. I was afraid my dad was going to die. He didn't. He recovered. He actually had health problems. He had cardiac health problems from that point on in his life, but he lived a long life. So I started thinking about how do we respond to death ourselves. And a few things that I thought of is one way that we, when we think about death, or maybe we don't even think about it, is we fight death. We try to stay alive because being alive is good. We want to be alive. We're excited when somebody gets better, when they're sick and they get better, because we don't want to lose them. And it's interesting to me, too. I read a book years ago titled Affliction, and one of the things that the author said in the book was that death was never the intention of God. Death entered the world through sin, but it was never originally God's plan. God didn't want us to die. He wants us to live. And so I thought, in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 26, actually the whole chapter of 1 Corinthians is really about the resurrection and how without the resurrection, our faith is kind of useless, because what are we doing it for if we're just going to die and that's it? But our hope is in the resurrection. So that's what 1 Corinthians 15 is all about. But at the end of the chapter, it says that the last enemy to be destroyed is death. And like I had shared with you when I preached on faith that Enoch was taken up and he didn't experience death. But that's very rare. I think we all would pretty much agree that we have a 1 in 1 chance of dying in this room. That's something we're all going to go through. It's our last battle. It's our last call, in a sense. It's our last enemy. Because in Corinthians it says, the last enemy to be destroyed is death. So death is our enemy. And it really is. None of us really go down easy, I don't think. Even people, you hear that people die peacefully. And I think that is true. I think that God can bring us a certain amount of peace as we walk through that. But it's still difficult and painful, and we're going to suffer. I think about how when people get sick, when they get cancer, and they say they're battling cancer. We're battling our enemy. Cancer is the enemy. We are battling because we want to live. Living is good, and we want to keep doing it. And I found this, I heard this quote this week, actually, in one of my devotions, It said, we live in a finite world where everything is dying, shedding its strength. And I just love that picture of everything shedding its strength, because that is what is happening to all of us. I had heard years and years ago, I had heard somebody say that you're still growing as a person up until the age of 25. You know, up until the age of 25, you're still growing, your body's still developing and growing. You may not see it. It's kind of like a puppy. They grow really fast, and then you don't think they're still growing, and they tell you, well, they're still growing. It's that way with human beings, too, and that we're still growing. We may look fully grown and developed, but up to about the age of 25, we're still growing. And after that, it's all downhill. Now, that's sad. That's kind of sad, but I think anybody seeing that process and living through it would agree that you kind of get, you hit this peak, and then it's like, oh man, things start going south a little bit. And I know they do. I mean, I see it every day in my body. And so, and that's hard. It says it's hard to accept that all our lives, and so we look for exceptions to that. It's not something that we enjoy. We don't enjoy that process. We don't enjoy watching our bodies start to fall apart. That's not fun. It's not fun for me. And so we fight. Like I said, that is our way of fighting the dying process, because now we're on that side of it, and we fight it. And as a culture, we fight it. And some of the ways that we fight it can be good. I wrote down a couple of them, nutrition and fitness. I think nutrition is really important. I think what you put into your body matters, because what you take in is going to determine the quality of your life. And when you use your body and you move your body, it just is true that it works better. So the quality of your life goes up a little bit. But no matter how well you eat and how much you exercise, the inevitable is coming. That one-on-one thing, that last enemy. Death is coming to all of us. This is such a downer. I thought, do I ever get to preach anything that's more upbeat? But this is what God gave me. And so I think those things are good. I don't think those things are good when they become our obsession and we think that we're going to win. And I think it's kind of an unconscious thing. We don't really even realize that we're doing it. But when we start, that becomes our number one thing, you know. It's like, that's all I'm going to do is think about, you know, eating perfectly or, you know, exercising X amount of times, because then I'm fighting off death. I mean, that's really what we're doing, but we don't cognitively necessarily think that. So don't get me wrong. I'm not telling you not to exercise or not to eat well, because I think those things are important. But I think when they become all important, you're missing the point. And really, you're fighting that enemy. I'm just even thinking about that, because unfortunately, the enemy still is there. Another thing that I think that we do as a people, as a culture, and individually is we deny death. We live like it's not coming. I think that you can see that in our culture, and the cosmetic industry and the plastic surgery industry. I mean, it's like, young is good. People look at 25-year-olds and say, that's good. That's what I want. That's what I'm going to try to achieve. Well, it's easy to achieve if you're 25. Really difficult to achieve when you're 50 or older, or even, you know, 35 or whatever. It's like, you need to be where you are, and you know, our culture understands that we want to live. They understand that life is good, and so that's why they're making billions of dollars helping us try to get rid of our wrinkles and make our hair the color that it used to be when we were young, and all the things that we do. And I fall prey to all of those things as well. You know, I'm not preaching this to you. I'm preaching it to me, because. And I think, like I said, I think there's that, back there somewhere in the recesses of my mind is that thing of, I'm going to die someday, and I'm going to put that off because I don't want to. And so maybe if I look a little younger in the mirror, maybe I'm putting it off even further down the road than I think. They say that the first stage of death is denial. And So I think, well, that's what we do. We're all in the first stages of death in some ways. We're just denying that it's coming. And when people talk about death, which I'm doing, it just feels very vulnerable to say these things to you, but when you talk about it, most people don't want to hear it. You know, they don't. And I thought a beautiful example of that came from Jesus himself. And in Matthew 16, Jesus was talking to his disciples. And this was right after the time when they had the discussion, when Jesus asked his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" And they said, "You're the Messiah, you're the living God." And it says, "From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, chief priests, and teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life." So how did the disciples respond to that news? I mean, he just told them, "I'm going to die." And he was not denying his death. He was looking ahead and saying, "This is what's going to happen to me. I'm going to go to Jerusalem. They're going to mock me. They're going to beat me. And then they're going to kill me. And I'm going to die." Now, he did say, "I'm going to be raised to life." That's the hope part. We want to hold on to that. But his disciples responded. Peter said, it says, Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. "Never, Lord," he said, "this shall never happen to you." Went right to that place of denial. "You're not going to die. We aren't going to let that happen to you." And Jesus was like, "It's going to happen. Face it. You know, this. I'm telling you, this is what's going to happen." And so, once again, they loved Jesus, and they didn't want that to happen to him. So let's just live in denial. Let's pretend like that's not going to happen. And Jesus rebuked him. Actually, and Jesus' response was, "Get behind me, Satan." Now, and what he was saying is that you're hindering the work of God. This is where I'm going, and I'm telling you, this is what's going to happen. And it made me think about in my own life, my grandmother, she lived for 95 years, almost 96 years. And when she was 68 years old, we gave her this huge, big surprise birthday party because my mother was sure she wasn't going to make it to 70. And so we had it at 68. But my grandmother, she was not afraid of death. She would talk about death. She would talk about, "Yeah, well, I probably won't be here that much longer," or things like that that people say. And every time she said it, we would rebuke her and say, "Oh, grandmother, you're not going to die," you know, or because we didn't want her to die. We loved her. And so it's like, "I don't want to talk about your death. Well, let's push that off. Let's not think about that. I don't want to live in that reality right now," you know. And she wasn't morbid. She wasn't saying it in a morbid sense. She just knew that's going to happen. I'm getting older, and someday that's going to happen. And so she was such a wonderful example to me of somebody that wasn't afraid to die. However, and actually, my grandmother, she experienced all of those deaths. One of the deaths that I talked about in my early childhood was her husband. She was 48 when my granddad died, and she never remarried. She felt like she had had the best. And so she said, you know, "Once you've had the best, what do you do?" So she never remarried, and she watched her first granddaughter die. I mean, she went through all those deaths too, but somehow her response was not one of fear. It wasn't true about other people in my life. But anyways, the next thing I wanted to talk about was sometimes we get a wake-up call. Sometimes in our lives, we get a wake-up call that makes us have to really face our mortality or face the fact that life is precious and we don't know how long we're going to be here. None of us know that. We all hope for the big long life. You know, that's what we all want, and that's a good thing because we love life, but we really don't know. And so in the last couple weeks, too, as I've been thinking about all of these things, the Lord has just presented me with lots of illustrations of a wake-up call. One of them, I was flipping around one day on the TV looking for something to watch, and I found a movie that I had seen years ago. It was called Life is a House. I don't know if you've seen it. It's with Kevin Klein, but basically, it's this man that he goes to the doctor and he finds out that he has cancer and that he only has 3 or 4 months to live. And it was such a great movie on waking up, because that's what he did. He woke up. He saw how he had been kind of sleepwalking through life and not really paying attention to the things that really mattered to him. I mean, he went and quit his job, or actually I think they fired him right after that too. And he had been at this job for 20 years, and his boss said to him, you know, I know you've loved this job. And he said, no, I haven't. He said, I hated this job the first day that I started up until today. I hate this job today. And I know people like that. I know people that they kind of just, you know, they sleepwalk through life. And so he saw it as an opportunity, as a wake-up call to say what matters. And what he did is he turned toward the people that he loved and the things that mattered and what he was going to leave when he left, what he was going to leave behind when he left. I just appreciated that movie and on many different levels, because he mended a lot of relationships and things. One of the biggest wake-up calls for me and for my family was in 2002. My dad, I was teaching at the time, and so I was in class with my kids, and I got a phone call that my dad, again, and my dad, I love my dad dearly, but he was a man who deeply feared death, and he also was a man who deeply loved God and served God with his life in so many ways. And I just think in his woundedness from all of the death as a young man that he experienced, he just never really got over that very much. And so in 2002, my dad was playing golf, and he had cardiac arrest on the golf course in mid-sentence. He was getting ready to tee off. In mid-sentence, he just collapsed on the ground, and his heart stopped. And because he was golfing that day with a doctor, which God's hand was in the whole thing, because that doctor was right there when my dad collapsed, he started CPR on him. And he did CPR on my dad for, he said, 15 to 20 minutes, and never got a pulse. That's how long it took for the emergency team to get there for my dad. He said he never got a pulse. They pulled out the paddles. They shocked his heart twice to get it started. And we were told later that, you know, whenever you see that on TV, they bring in the paddles, they shock the people, boom, okay, we got it. We got a heartbeat, and everything's good. And then we found out, you know, the statistics of that is 1 in 100 times does it work. You know, it works 1 in 1 times on television almost. But in real life, they say 1 in 100 times does it actually bring the person back. So they brought my dad back, you know, carted him off to the hospital. I got the phone call that he's at the hospital. So my family converged at the hospital, and the doctor came out and said, and I think, you know, this doctor, it was where this hospital was in Pasadena, California, saw a lot of older men coming in from the golf course. This was not something that was a rare occasion. And so they would be brought in, and typically they're not golfing probably with a doctor. Maybe if they got lucky, like, well, I don't think it was luck. But if they have that kind of a situation, but he didn't know that, the doctor. So they hooked my dad up to these machines and everything. And so when he came out and gave us the prognosis of my dad's life, he basically said, he's probably not going to live to see tomorrow. And if he does, he probably won't have any brain function. And so I stood there and thought, my dad is dead. That's what I thought. And so we went through the emotion of death at that moment. It was difficult. Because, again, life is precious, and I didn't want to let go of my dad. And my greatest fears of my childhood had caught up to me finally. Because we went through this up until, I mean, from 1966 until 2002, not death in our family. We just didn't have a lot of death. And so we kind of lived this happy life and enjoyed it. And then this happened, and it was an event that just happened like that, and I thought, my dad is dead. I'll never see him again. And I started thinking about all of that. Well, as time went on, to make a long story short, my dad didn't die that day. And he actually, because the doctor knew what he was doing, giving him such good CPR, he was getting the oxygen to his brain. Everything went just right for him. And my dad was given 5 more years of life. And he was in intensive care for 5 weeks. We were on this roller coaster for 5 weeks. He's good, he's bad, he's good, he's bad. Day after day after day. And so that was excruciating. That summer was excruciating. I think the suffering and the pain, since a lot of the things that we've experienced in our life, I said there's things worse than death. And I think suffering and pain that leads up to death is worse than death itself. So we went through that time. After that, Bruce and I just started going through a string of deaths in our family. And so, again, here I am having these string of deaths in my life. And so when I said I decided to talk to you about this, I was sitting with Bruce and I said, you know, when I comparing those two times of my life, I'm not as fearful. I'm not going to say I never fear death anymore, because that would be a lie. But I do know God is doing a work in my life that is bringing me more into a piece of what death looks like, and that there is something to hope for, which is resurrection. So for my dad, though, what I was talking about, wake-up calls, that was a wake-up call for my dad. Because I think my dad, too, in all of his life, he went through, he was a slave to the fear of death. And after he was brought back to life, he was a different man. For 5 years, he spent a lot of time reflecting and looking at his life and the things that he had done and the things that mattered to him. And it just changed him. And I think when he did leave this earth, he left with much more peace, because he wasn't looking at his life and he wasn't fighting as much. My dad was a fighter. You talk about fighting to live. I've never seen anybody fight as hard as he did to live, because he loved life. So he fought to the bitter end. But when he went in peace. And I know that he went to the Lord. We as a congregation, as a group of people, have also had an experience, a near-death experience recently with Arden's accident. And again, I loved it, because I knew I was going to preach this, and I loved it that Janet stood up last week and said, it's like a wake-up call. I mean, though I don't know if those are exact words, but it's kind of what you said, is that God woke us up and said, pay attention, life is precious, think about these things, and live your life well. And I love that, and believe me, I shudder to think, it's like, I'm so thankful that he is here. I'm so thankful for his life, and that God gave us all that opportunity to see how quickly it can be taken from us too. And so we need to pay attention to that. Also, another thing that came to me, I had watched that movie. The next day I was out exercising, because I still exercise. And when I usually just ride a stationary bike and I listen to my iPod, and I stick my iPod on shuffle, and whatever comes up, that's what I feel like God wants me to hear. And so I was out there riding, and actually Bruce was standing outside and he heard it too. But the song that came on was a country western song. And I'm not a huge country western fan, but I do like some of them music. And the name of the song is titled Live Like You Were Dying. And it was sung by Tim McGraw and a few years ago. And I actually, like I said, I don't even have that much country music on my iPod, but this song really caught my interest a while back. And I put it on there because I love the words to this song. And so I would like to read them to you. Because this is, again, about a man that really got a wake-up call. And It says, he said, I was in my early 40s with a lot of life before me, and a moment came that stopped me on a dime. I spent most of the days looking at the x-rays, talking about the options, and talking about sweet time. I asked him when it sank in that this might really be the real end. How's it hit you when you get that kind of news? Man, what do you do? And he says, and it's funny, the beginning of this, it's kind of like the bucket list, you know, it's like, it says, I went skydiving, I went Rocky Mountain climbing, I went 2.7 seconds on a bull named Fu Manchu. But it's the next part that I really like. It says, and I loved deeper, and I spoke sweeter, and I gave forgiveness I've been denying. And he said, someday I hope you get the chance to live like you were dying. He said, I was finally the husband that most of the time I wasn't, and I became a friend would like to have. And all of a sudden, going fishing wasn't such an imposition, and I went 3 times that year I lost my dad. Well, I finally read the good book, and I took a good, long, hard look at what to do if I could do it all again. And he said, someday, I hope you get the chance to live like you were dying. Like tomorrow was a gift, and you've got eternity to think about what you would do with it. What could you do with it? What can you do with it? What would I do with it? And I think about Jesus, and Jesus lived like he was dying. Jesus, you know, he didn't go skydiving and all of those things that the guy talks about. But even that, I mean, you know, it's, I don't know, if I got the news, I might think, I don't know, I wouldn't jump out of a plane, but I might do something fun that I always wanted to do. I know, he jumped out of a plane. I don't think I want to. But Jesus lived like he was dying. When he told his disciples, this is my road, this is where I'm going, he knew he had a mission, he knew he had a purpose, and he knew what it was, and he kept going. And his mission was to love people, to do the will of God, to really sacrifice his life for all of us. And so he made every moment of his life count from that point until he died on the cross. And he lived well, and he loved well. And that's what I feel God is calling us to do. Because death is real, but we have a living hope in the fact that when we pass through death, and it says we're to follow Jesus while we're alive, we're to follow him, which means live like he lived, love well, live well and love well the people in your life. Follow him in life, because you're going to follow him in death as well. And, you know, I was also reading this week, I was reading when Jesus was in the Garden of Gethsemane before he died, and I was looking to say, was Jesus afraid? Was he afraid of his death? And I didn't read that he was afraid. It didn't say that Jesus was afraid. It said that Jesus was in anguish, which means he was in deep suffering and pain because he knew his death was coming. Like I said, that leading up to death is not pleasant. So much so that he sweat drops of blood. And he was in deep anguish. And yet he said, not my will, but your will, to the Father, and knew that God would carry him through that time. And he came back. Actually, I have some pictures here. This is after the resurrection. And I love this picture. I was just looking at pictures of after Jesus rose from the dead. This picture is with him and Mary, when Mary sees him at the tomb. And what I love about these illustrations is that Jesus was a person. He was real. He was flesh and blood. He wasn't a spirit out there, you know. Sometimes I think when we think about the resurrection, it's like, well, he died and then he rose again and, you know, he's gone. But he didn't. He walked around on the earth, and he went, and he loved the people that he loved, that he was close to before he ascended into heaven. And one of those was Mary. It says that Mary didn't recognize him until he called her by name. And then she saw, this is Jesus. So there's some mystery around death, too. There's some mystery of, I don't know what we're going to look like. I don't know what our bodies are necessarily going to be like. But I do know that we are going to have a body, and we are going to have life after death. This next one is kind of different. This illustrates Thomas coming, because when Jesus first came to the 12 disciples after he died and he rose, he came to them, and it said Thomas wasn't with them. And so when they said, Thomas, he's alive. We saw him. He's alive. Jesus is alive. He said, yeah, right. Basically, Thomas was like, well, I won't believe it until I put my fingers in the nail holes in his hands, and I put my hand in his side. And so this is kind of Thomas actually doing that, like, well, I guess that really is him. And I love this because it portrays Jesus as fully human and fully God, too. But he had a body. He was one of us. And then this is another photo. This is the road to Emmaus. Again, Jesus in his body, bodily resurrection. He's walking along the road with these two young men that are grieved over the fact that he died. And they didn't know he rose. They didn't know that yet. And he's walking along. And again, he's like, what are you so sad about? What are you sad about? And they said, well, you know, didn't you hear? They put Jesus to death. You know, he's gone and whatever. And they didn't recognize him again. Still Jesus. I don't know if God was hiding that from their eyes or what, or if maybe his body was different in a way that they didn't recognize. I don't know. It's a mystery. But when they went to town, they said, oh, come stay with us. He was going to go on, and they said, no, come eat with us. And so he did. He went and he ate with them, and it said when he broke the bread, they recognized him. They knew, this is Jesus. So going back to the text, we need to remember that we are going to have a new birth, that yes, we are going to die, but we don't, and it's going to hurt. No matter how peaceful it is, if it isn't hurt you, it's going to hurt everybody around you. And we just watched Bruce's dad die a few months ago, and it was a beautiful death, if you can say death is beautiful, in the sense that he had a peaceful passing, but it was painful to watch him go. It was painful for us to watch him go. And it never was God's intention for us to be separated, for us to have to suffer like that. That wasn't God's plan in the original plan. But we have our living hope is in the resurrection of Jesus, that we also will be resurrected. And as we follow Jesus in death, we will also follow Jesus in life through resurrection. We will rise again. We will live again. So my question for this morning is, how might God be calling you to wake up today? And so I would just like to take a few minutes of silence, and I would just ask you to allow God to speak to you in the things that I've been talking about and sharing with you, and something that God might want to show you about how he wants you to see things a little differently in your life. Father, I thank you so much for loving us and paving the way for us in life and in death and in resurrection. And I just pray, Father, that you would speak to us clearly as we walk through our days and show us, help us to pay attention so that we will live our lives well and that we will love those that you have given to us well. And that we would not be afraid to live like we're dying, because that is a reality, but it doesn't have to be one without hope. And that our hope is in you, our living God. And I thank you for this morning. And I pray for the people that weren't able to be here, Lord, because of their sicknesses. And I know that I just pray that you would even relieve them of any burden of any kind of guilt of thinking that they let this body down, because you are the one that leads us and you know what we need. So I thank you for this morning, and I pray in Jesus' name, amen.